On today's program, we're going to start out with a little thought experiment, with a little imagining, if you will. Imagine with me that you lived during the time of the Israelite bondage to slavery in Egypt. Imagine you're one of those people, you grew up your whole life in bondage, you're in slavery. It shouldn't be so hard for us today, actually, to imagine growing up in bondage or living in bondage. But imagine you lived in the time of Moses. Then along comes this guy named Moses, and he's promising to get you out of slavery, to get you out of Egypt. He's going to take you to a land flowing with milk and honey. He's going to get you out of Egypt and out from under bondage. So you say, all right, that sounds great. What do we got to do? And he says, well, first you need to slaughter a lamb and put the blood of the lamb on the doorposts of your house. And you need to stay inside all night and eat the lamb. And then in the morning, we'll leave and head to the promised land. We'll get you out of here. And so you do all of that. And in the morning, he gathers everybody up to leave Egypt. And you're like, all right, this guy's for real. And he starts leading you through some really rough country. And then here you are all of a sudden at a dead end at the sea. And the Egyptian army is behind you. Pharaoh has decided to take you back. And there looks like there's nowhere to go. You're trapped. And then Moses raises his rod, splits the sea, and you cross over it on dry land. And you're like, wow, this guy is for real. And we get to the other side of the sea. The sea closes over the Egyptian army, and you're free. Now you've got the sea between you and Egypt. You are out of Egypt. You're out of bondage. And so then you're looking to Moses and you're saying, okay, what's next? And he's like, well, I got you out of Egypt. You're free. You're not in slavery anymore. Pharaoh's gone. The Egyptian army's gone. There you go. You're free. Go on. Have a good time. You're free. You're not in Egypt anymore. And you're looking out over this expanse of desert, this great wilderness with no road signs, no roads, no nothing. It's just wide open expanse of nothing. And you're like, well, but where's the promised land flowing with milk and honey? And they're like, well, you'll find it. It's out there. You're not in Egypt anymore. And so you pick up and heave your huge bag of pagan idols over your shoulder because you were never told that you weren't supposed to take those pagan idols out of Egypt with you. You heave them up over your shoulder and you start hiking out through the wilderness with them, and they're dragging you down. And so you start wandering around out in the desert looking for the promised land. No directions, no instructions on what you're supposed to be doing. No road signs, no way to know how to get to the promised land. So around and around you go. Think this is far-fetched? Well, let's fast forward to today. The evangelical church is very good at getting people through the door and teaching them to put the blood of Jesus on the doorposts of their heart so that they can be freed from slavery and that you will get into the promised land of eternal life. And so you put the blood, you accept Yeshua, put the blood on the doorposts of your heart. And so the next thing they tell you need to do is follow Jesus in baptism, i.e. follow Moses through the Red Sea. And so you do. And then you get up on the other side and you feel wonderful. I'm free. I'm free from sin. I'm forgiven. And that's awesome. But then you're like, okay, now what's next? And they say, well, you're free from sin. You're saved. And you don't need to worry about going to hell. So you can have a good life now. And you're like, well, but I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Where is the promised land? What do I do now? And they never tell you that the instructions are found in the front of the book. And instead, they tell you that those instructions are all gone. They turn you loose in the wilderness, but they don't tell you where to find the directions on how to get to where you're going, how to meet the bridegroom, how to get to the wedding. And you're not even told that you're not supposed to take your pagan idols with you. The church has been wandering around in the desert for 2,000 years because we skipped the front of the book. And the bridegroom is standing at the mountain waiting for the bride and for the guests. And he's standing there all by himself holding the marriage contract in his hand. And the bride and the guests have never even got to see the marriage contract because they're told to start at the end of the book. And so they're looking for the stuff at the end of the book, but they don't know how to get to that place. And so around and around they wander until finally, fast forward to today, Yeshua is sending out his Holy Spirit, his set-apart spirit, his Ruach, his messenger, and he, like the good shepherd, is gathering Yahweh's people, gathering the bride and the guests, and assembling them in the wilderness, getting us ready to actually go on the journey to the promised land. And those that you're assembling, look, we're reading the front of the book. We're starting to understand the instructions and the marriage covenant and who we are and where we've been and then where we're going. We're starting to understand these things. And so today, that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at specifically Jeremiah 31 that gives us an idea of how we're going to get to the promised land, how we're being gathered together, and why we're being gathered together. And then we're going to look at the book of Joshua, starting in chapter 1, to see if perhaps we can glean a possible timeline from the book of Joshua. You might see some surprising prophetic pictures or parallels in the book of Joshua as it relates to the timing of our regathering back to the land during the last 7 years of tribulation that we see in the book of Revelation. First, I want to go over some basics for maybe if there's some new people out there that haven't heard us before. We believe that we are grafted into the tree of Israel once we accept Yeshua as Lord and Savior, as Romans 11 tells us. Paul tells us in Romans 11 that we are grafted in by faith in Yeshua into the tree of Israel. And so all of the promises to Israel now belong to us as well. And there is only one tree, and that is believing Israel. There were two trees. There's the wild olive tree, and then there's the olive tree of Israel, and we come out of the wild olive tree and can be grafted in through Yeshua into the tree of Israel, whose root goes back to all of the promises made to the fathers, and that root is Yeshua, the word of Yahweh made flesh. Jews and Gentiles can both be grafted into the tree. Jews will be grafted back into their tree, and Gentiles will be grafted into the tree for the first time, but we're all one tree. And all of the promises and our destination are for those that are grafted into the tree, those that have accepted the offer of the kingdom. And that's where we're headed, is to the kingdom, to the promised land that Yahweh promised to the fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all of their descendants. And we are reborn as descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whether we were originally bloodborn or not. So let's end our wandering and take a look at where we're going and how we're going to get there. Jeremiah 31. At the same time, says Yahweh, I will be the Elohim of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. Thus says Yahweh, the people who survived the sword found grace in the wilderness, Israel, when I went to give him rest. Yahweh has appeared of old to me, saying, Yes, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, with loving kindnesses, I have drawn you. Again, I will build you, and you shall be rebuilt, O Virgin of Israel. You shall again be adorned with your tambourines, and shall go forth in dances for those who rejoice. You shall yet plant vines on the mountains of Samaria. The planters shall plant and eat them as ordinary food. For there shall be a day when the watchman will cry on Mount Ephraim, Arise, and let us go up to Zion, to Yahweh our Elohim. For thus says Yahweh, Sing with gladness for Jacob, and shout among the chief of the nations. Proclaim, give praise, and say, O Yahweh, save your people, the remnant of Israel. Behold, I will bring them from the north country, and gather them from the ends of the earth. Among them the blind and the lame, the woman with child, and the one who labors with child together. A great throng shall return there. They shall come with weeping, and with supplications I will lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers of waters, in a straight way in which they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of Yahweh, O nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, He who scattered Israel will gather him, and keep him as a shepherd does his flock. For Yahweh has redeemed Jacob and ransomed him from the hand of one stronger than he. Therefore they shall come and sing in the height of Zion, streaming to the goodness of Yahweh, for wheat and new wine and oil, for the young of the flock and the herd. Their souls shall be like a well-watered garden, and they shall sorrow no more at all. Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance, and the young men and the old together, for I will turn their mourning to joy. Will comfort them, and make them rejoice rather than sorrow. I will satiate the soul of the priests with abundance, and my people shall be satisfied with my goodness, says Yahweh. Now, many teach that these verses have already been fulfilled in the regathering of the Jews back to the modern state of Israel, but I don't believe that is the complete fulfillment. It is just the beginning of the fulfillment, and there are a lot that have gathered back over there that actually don't belong there, while there are some that, of course, do. So I'm going to read Ezekiel chapter 11, starting in verse 13. Ezekiel was being shown the judgment that was going to befall the nation of Israel and the nation of Judah. And so this is what Ezekiel says in response to this judgment that he sees, starting in verse 13 of chapter 11. Then I fell on my face and cried with a loud voice and said, Ah, Yahweh Elohim, will you make a complete end of the remnant of Israel? Again, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, your brethren, your relatives, your kinsmen, and all the house of Israel in its entirety are those about whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem have said, Get far away from Yahweh. This land has been given to us as a possession. Sound familiar? Therefore say, Thus says Yahweh Elohim, although I have cast them far off among the Gentiles, and although I have scattered them among the countries, yet I shall be a little sanctuary for them in the countries where they have gone. Therefore say, Thus says Yahweh Elohim, I will gather you from the peoples, assemble you from the countries where you have been scattered, and I will give you the land of Israel. And they will go there, and they will take away all its detestable things and all its abominations from there. Then I will give them one heart, and I will put my new spirit within them, and take the stony heart out of their flesh, and give them a heart of flesh, that they may walk in my statutes and keep my judgments, and do them, and they shall be my people, and I will be their Elohim. But as for those whose hearts walk after the heart of their detestable things and their abominations, I will recompense them their deeds on their own heads, says Yahweh Elohim. And so this has not been completely fulfilled yet. He says, all of your relatives and your kinsmen and all of the house of Israel, those in all entirety, about whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem have said, get far away from Yahweh. This land has been given as a possession to us. And the Jews in the land today, many of them, even teach that the Shabbat is for the Jews only. It's not as a covenant of those that are in covenant through Yeshua. And they even tell us in their writings that it is illegal for quote-unquote Gentiles to honor the Sabbath. And they are saying, this land is our possession. Stay away. You don't belong here if you believe in Yeshua Messiah. And so this is also telling us that when all the house of Israel is gathered, then we will go there and we will take away all of its detestable things and all of its abominations from there. And this obviously has not been done yet. There are tons of detestable things and abominations still in the land and taking place in the land of Israel. So back to Jeremiah chapter 31, and I'm going to skip down to verse 31. Behold, the days are coming, says Yahweh, when I will make a new covenant, renewed covenant, or fresh covenant. This is the same word, I believe, that is for like new moon. The moon is not actually a new moon every month. It's a renewed moon. It's a fresh moon. It starts over. And so this is the new or refreshed covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them up out of the land of Egypt, my covenant which they broke, though I was a husband to them, says Yahweh. But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says Yahweh. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts, and I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. Then I'm going to skip to Jeremiah 32, verse 6. And Jeremiah said, The word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Behold, Hanameel, the son of Shalom, your uncle, will come to you, saying, Buy my field which is in Anathoth, for the right of redemption is yours to buy it. Then Hanameel, my uncle's son, came to me in the court of the prison, according to the word of Yahweh, and said to me, Please buy my field that is in Anathoth, which is in the country of Benjamin, for the right of inheritance is yours, and the redemption yours. Buy it for yourself. Then I knew that this was the word of Yahweh. So I bought the field from Hanamel, the son of my uncle, who was in Anathoth, and weighed out to him the money, 17 shekels of silver. And I signed the deed and sealed it, took witness, and weighed the money in the balances. So I took the purchase deed, both that which was sealed according to the law and custom, and that which was open. We're going to come back to that verse 11 here in just a minute. And I gave the purchase deed to Baruch, the son of Neriah, son of Mahasajah, in the presence of Hanamel, my uncle's son, and in the presence of the witness who signed the purchase deed before all the Jews who sat in the court of the prison. Then I charged Baruch before them, saying, Thus says Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, take these deeds, both this purchase deed which is sealed and this deed which is open, and put them in an earthen vessel, that they may last for many days. For thus says Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, houses and fields and vineyards shall be possessed again in this land. So let's go back to verse 11 really quick. Jeremiah took the purchase deed, both that which was sealed according to the law and custom, and that which was open. So in ancient Israel or ancient times, when there was a deed, there were actually two deeds. One that is sealed and one that is open. The one that is open, anybody can read, and the second witness to the one that is open is the one that is sealed. As the way I understand it, if there ever is a dispute as to whether a deed is authentic or not, then they would have to bring the sealed deed before a judge, probably, and open the sealed deed and make sure that the two of them matched. And then that would be the witness to the open deed that, yes, indeed, this land did belong to the person claiming it. So that is what Jeremiah did here. To my understanding, he had two deeds. They're exactly the same. And he sealed one and one was open according to the custom and according to the law. So what this is a picture of, I believe, is the scriptures, the word of Yahweh, the promises of the land to the children of Israel, his Torah, the scriptures that we have today, both the old and the new, but especially the old, are the open deed, which everyone can read. We can all read for ourselves that Yahweh gave the land of Israel to the children of Israel, to the seed of Abraham. And then the New Testament tells us that seed also is the seed that believe in Yeshua Messiah. They're one tree, and the land of Israel has been given to them, to us. And this is the open deed which everyone can read. And if there is any doubt that this is an actual deed, and as to whether or not this deed is authentic and truly from Yahweh, then there is also a sealed deed which will match and give witness to the open deed. So is this sealed deed, the scroll which is sealed, that Yeshua is the only one who had the right to open it in the book of Revelation? That is, I believe, the sealed deed to the land of Israel, to the kingdom, and actually to the entire earth that belongs to Yeshua and to his people. And that is the deed, the little book that's sealed. We see a book that is sealed in Ezekiel, I believe, and Daniel. And then we also see the sealed scroll in Revelation. And in the physical realm, could these also be the scrolls that were hidden in the earthen jars? Or could these scrolls be among the scrolls that were hidden in the earthen jars by the Dead Sea, known as the Dead Sea Scrolls? Skipping down to verse 16 of chapter 32, Now when I had delivered the purchase deed to Baruch, the son of Neriah, I prayed to Yahweh, saying, O Yahweh Elohim, behold, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arm. There is nothing too hard for you. You show loving kindness to thousands and repay the iniquity of the fathers into the bosom of their children after them. The great, the mighty Elohim, whose name is Yahweh of hosts. You are great in counsel and mighty in work, for your eyes are open to all the ways of the sons of men, to give everyone according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. You have set signs and wonders in the land of Egypt to this day, and in Israel and among other men, and you have made yourself a name, as it is this day. You have brought your people Israel out of the land of Egypt with signs and wonders, with a strong hand and an outstretched arm, and with great terror. You have given them this land of which you swore to their fathers to give them, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they came in and took possession of it, but they have not obeyed your voice or walked in your law. They have done nothing of all that you commanded them to do. Therefore you have caused all this calamity to come upon them. Look, the siege mounds, they have come to the city to take it, and the city has been given into the hand of the Chaldeans, who fight against it, because of the sword and famine and pestilence. What you have spoken has happened. There you see it. And you have said to me, O Yahweh Elohim, buy the field for money and take witness. Yet the city has been given into the hand of the Chaldeans. Then the word of Yahweh came to Jeremiah, saying, Behold, I am Yahweh the Elohim of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Skipping to verse 37, Behold, I will gather them out of all countries where I have driven them in my anger, in my fury, and in great wrath. I will bring them back to this place, and I will cause them to dwell safely. They shall be my people, and I will be their Elohim. Then I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me forever, for the good of them and their children after them. And I will make an everlasting covenant with them, that I will not turn away from doing them good, but I will put my fear in their hearts, so that they will not depart from me. Yes, I will rejoice over them and do them good, and I will assuredly plant them in this land with all my heart and with all my soul. For thus says Yahweh, just as I have brought all this great calamity on this people, so I will bring on them all the good that I have promised them, and fields will be bought in this land of which you say, it is desolate without man or beast, it has been given to the hand of the Chaldeans. Men will buy fields for money, sign deeds and seal them, and take witness in the land of Benjamin, in the places around Jerusalem, in the cities of Judah, in the cities of the mountains, in the cities of the lowland, and in the cities of the south, for I will cause their captives to return, says Yahweh. So here we have the promise that we will return the whole house of Israel, and that includes those that have been reborn into the tree of Israel through Yeshua our Messiah. We will return to the land. We will buy land and be given deeds. We will tear down all of the abominations that are there, and he will gather us from the ends of the earth. So this has not all been fulfilled yet, obviously. We are waiting in faith for Yahweh Elohim to do this. And Joshua, I believe, is a picture of Yeshua's second coming to regather his people and actually lead us into the promised land, just as Joshua did. So now we're going to go to Joshua chapter 1 and see what this looked like back then and see if we can find any prophetic pictures in Joshua to give us a hint and some clues as to what it will look like in our day. Joshua chapter 1, starting in verse 2. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. So that's from the Mediterranean Sea to the river Euphrates, which is all the way over in Iraq, I believe. But Israel never did rule all that land from the Euphrates to the Mediterranean. So this is yet future. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for Yahweh your Elohim is with you wherever you go. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, "Pass through the camp and command the people, saying, 'Prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days you will cross over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which Yahweh your Elohim is giving you to possess.'" And we're going to see here in a minute that they did not actually cross over the Jordan within 3 days from this day, because as we read further, pay attention and you'll see that he sends two spies into the land, and they are in the land for a whole day. And then in the evening, Rahab, we know the story of Rahab, she lets them down the wall, and we'll see where she tells them to go and hide. And we're going to add up the days and see how many days it actually took them before they did cross over the Jordan. So we're going to skip to chapter 2, verse 1. "Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, 'Go view the land, especially Jericho.' So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there." So this is the day they left. They came to the house of Rahab and lodged there. I don't think they were very far. It probably took them most of a day or part of a day at least to get there. "And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, 'Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country.' So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, 'Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country.'" So this is the evening of the day when they left, probably early in the morning, and headed to Jericho. "Then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, 'Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened, as the gate was being shut when it was dark, that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them.' But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof. Then the men pursued them by the road to the Jordan, to the fords, and as soon as those who pursued them had gone out, they shut the gate. Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, 'I know that Yahweh has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how Yahweh dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted, neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For Yahweh your Elohim, he is Elohim in heaven above and on the earth beneath. Now therefore, I beg you, swear to me by Yahweh, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death.' So the men answered her, 'Our lives for yours, if none of you tell this business of ours, and it shall be when Yahweh has given us the land that we will deal kindly and truly with you.' Then she let them down by the rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall. She dwelt on the wall. And she said to them, 'Get to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you. Hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Afterward, you may go your way.'" So the men go to the mountain and hide there 3 days. They'd already been gone 1 day. So they hide there 3 days, that makes 4 days, and then they headed back to Joshua, to the children of Israel on the other side of the Jordan, to give their report. So they arrived back on the 5th day. So they did not leave and go over the Jordan within 3 days. So either the scripture is wrong and Joshua was wrong, or that's in there for a reason, which is what I believe, that it is actually prophetic that within 3 days we would head back to Israel and head over the Jordan. We would cross back over in the end of days, led by Yeshua and or his Ruach back to the land. And so this within 3 days can either mean within the last 3,000 years, which obviously it would be within the last 3,000 years from the time of Yeshua. But what I think it means more than that, and what makes more sense to me, is that if you think about the 7-year tribulation, It's split into two halves, according to many, many scriptures. There's the first 3.5 years and then the last 3.5 years. And so I think when it says within 3 days, it's talking about within the first 3 years of the 7-year tribulation. So sometime within the first 3 years of the tribulation, I believe, is when Yeshua will gather his people to cross over the Jordan, and we will be there before the midpoint of the tribulation. And I believe, based on other scriptures that we don't have time to go into right now, that it will be somewhere around the second year or the end of the second year of tribulation. And we will be over there to see the abomination of desolation. As Yeshua tells us, when we see the abomination of desolation, which takes place in the middle of the 7-year time period at about the 3.5-year point, we will see the abomination of desolation. And that's why he tells us, when you do see that, don't go down into your house to get any of your goods. Leave right away. Don't come in out of the field to get your stuff. Instead, get out of Dodge and go to the wilderness. And that is when the woman, I believe, is told also, she goes to the wilderness, to a place prepared for her. And I believe that is the last 3.5 years, is when we have the place prepared for us that we go to. I believe that it is possible that there is a 3-year time period when we are hidden, just as Rahab told the two spies to go to the mountain and hide for 3 days. And is it possible that when Rahab says, go to the mountain, or get to the mountain and hide there 3 days, is this possibly the mountain, Mount Sinai, the mountain? And if you remember correctly, Lot was told, when he was taken, drug out of Sodom and Gomorrah by the angels, he was told to go to the mountain also. And it's the same exact form of the word mountain in both scriptures. It's also interesting, when Moses went up onto the mount to get the tablets of stone, it is also the same form of the word mountain. There are several different forms of the word mountain. I mean, added letters and less letters and that type of thing. But this form in Deuteronomy for Mount Sinai, when Moses was told to go up on the mount, in Joshua here, where the spies are told to hide at the mountain, and in Genesis, where Lot is told to go to the mountain, the form is hey, hey, resh, hey, in all of those scriptures. So I find that really interesting. Is it possible that the hiding place that is prepared for us may be Mount Sinai? And I understand that a lot of people believe that it is Petra, and it could very well be Petra, but this is just an interesting alternative. We are told, when we see the abomination of desolation, to flee to the wilderness. Is it possibly the wilderness of Sinai, the wilderness of Mount Sinai? And the spies were told to go hide at the mountain. Is it possibly the mountain of Mount Sinai? And I do realize that the mountain that Lot was told to go to would not have been the same mountain that is nearby Jericho that the spies were told to go hide at. And both of those were probably also not Mount Sinai. But what I'm just suggesting is that perhaps this form of the word, the mountain, speaking of where Yah's people are told to hide when they come out of someplace, could just be referring to an end time picture of the mountain that we will be going to hide at in the end of days. I'm not saying that all of these mountains were the same mountains. They were very vague. They weren't named, and perhaps they weren't named for a reason, because they were just a prophetic picture that we will be hiding at a mountain. And just an idea, possibly Mount Sinai, but possibly not. In our next program, we'll take a closer look at Joshua and the possible mountains where Lot went, and the possible mountain where the spies went. Just some things to consider that I find really interesting. The message that's given to Joshua, I do believe, is a very, very, very important message for us as we get ready to cross over. So I'm going to read it again. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for Yahweh your Elohim is with you wherever you go.